the Mark with me, Aaron Thomas.
Hello there, beautiful specimen, and welcome or welcome back to Leave a Mark with me, Aaron Thomas. Leave a Mark comes with one huge trigger warning. We're going to be discussing all that life has to offer. Today, specifically, we're going to be discussing sexual assault, genocide, destruction of a place, and in many ways, how services and politics have let individuals and communities down. That's going to be something that is probably a reoccurring theme, all the things I've mentioned, and I want to talk about a lot of inequality and injustice, but also show human humor, joy, resilience. And so if that's what you're about, follow along. All socials are _leave.a.mark_. And yeah, share your thoughts, opinions, educate me on something. Today I'm going to find a comfortable spot outside. I'm going to try and denoise the audio quality, but my thoughts were, I denoise the audio quality anyway when I'm inside and there's kind of hissing and stuff. Obviously, I need to get a microphone, but that can be done in the future. For now, if in the background you hear the birds chirping and things like that, I think that's quite nice. Let me know your thoughts too. I'm going to get myself set up somewhere, probably resting against a tree, and going to dissect a few thoughts that have been coming up this past week, probably past 10 days now or something. Yeah, a group of youths just walked into the area that I was planning to chill in, so I'm skedaddling.
I'm actually one big contradiction of myself. I'm back in my house, back on my bed, nice and warm, with a cup of tea, because it got cold quick, and lots of youths, lots of people, so this is safety. Still do. While we're inching that bit closer to summer, it is still so very cold out, which is unfortunately evident to see in the loss of a life on Dublin streets, someone sleeping rough, Anne Delaney, who seems like a beautiful person who impacted a lot of people's lives, left a mark that was positive. There was a beautiful vigil held in Dublin to honour Anne and the person she is. So many comments that I've read everywhere that have been so beautiful. Something I found that encapsulates a bit of Anne's story on Reddit was someone sharing their perspective of her. Anne was a nurse who fell on hard times after losing her daughter. She loved to sing song, writing poetry, Liverpool, Westlife, and making kids on the street smile. She'd often give people money to buy her food or scratch cards in the shops, because she was too embarrassed to go into any shops. She always had a kind word for me when she used to be in Thomas Street. Any one of us could be Anne, with the state this country is in regarding mental health care and addiction issues. All it really takes is one job loss, one death, one divorce, or any other major trauma. We could all experience the same issues because of the lack of support services. And it really is so true. Fair play to that commenter. It sums up everyone's situation. My cousin sent me a good podcast. It was done by Eleanor Neal. I'll link the episode below. And it was basically just that. It was so many people's stories. It was an overlap of mental health issues, addiction issues, domestic violence, red flags, being there, being present, that someone is a danger to themselves or in danger in a dire situation and the support services aren't there or people are denied them, turned away. Of course, it's such a heavy issue. There's so many complex layers to it that the people that are in need of help want the help. Then, as I said, support and services have to be there, and the people in the support and services have to be compassionate and aware of these individual case by case circumstances, that it's not a one size fits all for whatever we're talking about. homeless issues, how people have gotten to where they are, addiction issues, how people have gotten into the rut that they're in, financial issues. Compassion and support is needed rather than people having to isolate and deal with the shame, and before you know it, things are too overwhelming that you can't see the way back. Mental health, addiction, they're so complicated, and I applaud anyone in the services, anyone in any service of care, because it's detrimental, really. If everything stopped tomorrow, these issues would still carry on. So, personally, to me, those are some of the mindsets I'm taking on, that they are really important things to me, and I really want to aim myself in the right direction career-wise, that it's going to be something that can truly help people, and that will be my passion, my purpose fulfilled. But the important thing is for me as well, that it's not just like everything that people have been experiencing, extensive wait times, not affordable, services that feel exclusive. A lot of change needed. My thoughts and prayers and love is with anyone that knows Anne, and especially her family and friends, sending a lot of strength. It's the call on the government that we need to actually make the change, to actually step up to the mark. Across the globe, things are changing day to day, so I know, of course, I'm missing out on so much. This has happened within 24 hours of me filming the video, so I'm popping in while editing because it's constant. Before I post this, I'm sure there'll be something new. The most recent update from Basan.
For those who don't know, hundreds of thousands of Palestinians of Gazans are facing a forced starvation in the north of Gaza Strip. They are starving to death, and the only way they can get food is to wait for food. So some aid trucks enter from the south to the north of Gaza via Rashid Street on Gaza Beach. And that's why, and because the amount of the aid trucks entering is very limited, maybe once or twice a month, people, fathers and brothers, started to sleep in the streets for weeks now. They're waiting for any aid trucks at least enters during the night so they can get some flour to the family. So tonight at 4 a.m. it happened. Some flour bags entered the north of Gaza Strip, and people started running to get that flour, to get that food for their families. So the Israeli tanks opened the fire on them, shooting and killing more than 80 people, wounding more than 400 people. Their blood was mixed with the flour. The mothers and sisters, the family, will never bake that flour, will never bake that bread. They will never get back to their homes. They said goodbye to the family to get some food, and they will never get back with that food again. They were killed. Israel is using the starvation weapon against us.
I'm going to link a lot of pages, people who can educate you a lot more efficiently than I could. Here in Ireland, it's important to see the continued support for safety and justice for the people of Ukraine. And it's necessary for us to crack down on violent, pointless acts that are occurring more and more. Buildings being burned down that are possibly going to hold refugees, or holding refugees. No point is actually being proven by these actions. No one is benefiting from it. Housing, shelter, being burned down in any way. While the Gardaí have issued statements claiming investigations are ongoing and cases are to be decided on by the Director of Public Prosecutions, the immediate rush to punish people protesting in support of civilians being slaughtered and terrorized. It feels stark in contrast to each other, to how little seems to be done to tackle the fascist groups that are on the rise more and more. It's scary, especially when with social media algorithms, you want to see more of what you're interested in and more like-minded mindsets and grow more and things like that. So it forms a sort of bubble of really interesting, curious people. And then when you look outside the window and see those people don't have the same thoughts, the same mindset, it is scary sometimes. But that's why it's so important to see different people across the country standing up and not taking that shit. Limerick Against Fascism, a platform page that is not putting up with any of their shit. Groups that are showing up next to these fascists, where these people go and saying we're not having it. I'd love to see that in person and get involved. Blessing Dada is someone I followed recently on Instagram, mental health activist in general, for everything that we should be educating ourselves on. Really interesting person, provokes thoughts, blind spots I definitely would have had, and talking about like in this pandemic, basically this crisis of a genocide, that when you're speaking to your therapist about it and stuff, and if they're kind of swaying you off it and telling you not to be thinking about these things, talking about these things, that's a really bad sign. Personally, when I was opening up with my therapist about my social anxiety, how it's really stopping me from getting involved and getting out there, he didn't take the approach of, oh, well, then you need to look after yourself and you need to maybe switch off a bit and stuff. He was like, you're going to get there. This is what you're passionate about. This is right. So we're going to work on strategies to get you there. And that felt so validating. That felt so good that I will be there. I will. I'll show up when I tame this fucking beast, social anxiety. But I have a therapist that's like-minded and I can express what's going on. He's given me interesting inner monologue things to be working on that I've been able to incorporate into daily life. And one thing that he's saying is look at things with curiosity, and that's helped me a lot so far. Back on track, I'll be coming back to mental health and all those things down the lines. Lots more people and podcasts and platforms, politicians. There are some good politicians. Well, anytime I think of the word now, I just think of the worst of the worst, but some very good ones. Claire Daly, Holly Kearns, all powerful people involved in politics from Ireland that have a brain, are doing the logical thing, demanding action. It's good to finally see the media and people in power condemning the leaders of Israel and their despicable military, along with those who support the violent atrocities being inflicted on civilians in the name of taking out Hamas or getting revenge for October 7th. This is completely illogical and inhumane, as is finally being made clear somewhat by other leaders talking more, using their words. Not enough action, unfortunately. Other stupid excuses used by Israel for their bombardment, their torture, the genocide. Other stupid excuses that Israel have used for their slaughter of civilians is that everyone and anyone is involved in Hamas, or that Hamas is using them as human shields, or kids are involved in Hamas. No excuse. Consistent videos coming from Palestine of children, babies, teenagers, women, men, civilians all being brutally killed. The people that have survived, picking at rubble, trying to find bodies, grabbing at hands and picking up loose limbs. Devastation, and there's nothing left. Children on the floors of hospitals that have already been attacked and sieged with no resources. Their mother on the ground. These children are at the most 3 years old, and people are trying to comfort them, reassure them that their mother will be fine. They'll look after their mother. The resources aren't there. There's nothing. And people just keep trying to pull excuses out of the book, and protocols and politics aren't helping the people that need action now. Need it well over 100 days ago. All over the world, you've been able to see such devastation through our phone screens at this stage that I beg anyone with footage of Israel's devastation. Of course, there are tragic victims from October 7th, and the hostages' families deserve justice, as do the people of Palestine. But if you have more videos of Israel devastation, don't be afraid to tag me, send them on, because all I'm seeing is devastation for the people of Palestine that is going to last years and years. It doesn't equal out in any way. Not that human lives ever should, but this doesn't make sense whatsoever. The language and spin story that's trying to be put on it, that is just so blatant. In Rajab, a 5-year-old Palestinian girl had some of her final moments captured by audio by the Palestinian Red Crescent Society. First, her 15-year-old relative was on the phone, and she was killed while on the phone. PRCS, Palestine Red Crescent Society, then got back in touch and picked up. Her five other families were dead in the car, and she was scared. She was terrified. She was asking a lot of questions, as anyone would, especially an innocent child. She is obviously so aware of her fate, as every day things have been like this, but now she is trapped in the car with the visual representation of what could be her fate at any second. Disgusting, terrifying. To be the mother, to hear that phone call, to hear that audio, or two paramedics were sent in to retrieve Hind. It is said that it was all operated between Israel and the Red Crescent Society. And later then, the paramedic was found nearby to Hind with all members of both vehicles murdered. The Israel officials have later said that troops were not in the area, couldn't have been them. They've snidely then kind of said that why would there be need to set up an operation to retrieve Hind if the troops weren't in the area? So what happened here? This is just one that has been murdered in a brutal, vicious revenge act that's fueled by emotion, emotional men making decisions. And then Palestinian people are called terrorists. Another grieving mother. There is, of course, plenty of beautiful activists in Israel who are calling for Netanyahu on his bike. I can never say his name right, and I don't really give a fuck, but I am just a bit shit with words. Anyway, there is plenty of people just wanting him out, calling for an early election over in Israel, because he's just running the country into the ground, causing such devastation for his own people. his wife is fighting with hostages' families because they're saying that their statements are a bit too in support of Hamas and whatever. Just fighting everybody, ready to blow up anyone, any innocent person, by the looks of it. Some really interesting conversations I've heard of Jewish people breaking down sometimes, crying and emotional, or just breaking down the different parts of their religion and community and expectations and the way they've been taught things. So really fascinating, especially to reflect on it and compare it to Catholicism and the different institutions within our country, within Ireland, sorry, just that we're like very a Catholic country, very Christian, and the institutions and things that have just always ingrained in us. Like, we say we're free and we're so individual, but we all have the same shame to a certain degree, the same guilt in ourselves and pain to a certain degree. I think that's definitely instilled by the religions, and it's something that holds us back as people more than, in my opinion, more than it actually allows us to connect with the higher power. Fill in your blank. Some of the war crimes are the killing of thousands of already displaced civilians, stopping all the humanitarian aid, stopping any power, fuel, sending people to safe zones and then bombing them, attacking, killing thousands of already displaced civilians in this genocide, not to mention causing an ecocide, something I'm trying to catch up on, something that's obviously going to last years, and I'm not educated in it. So as I said, I'll link some voices that I've heard talking about it that can really illuminate you on how much destruction this is. Actually more than just what meets the eye, what you can see and what we're hearing, what we're seeing, how deep this is going to go into the soil, into the ground, into the next generations. So many people who can easily break down why the people of Palestine are so angry, what has been going on pre-October 7th. Yuval Abraham, an Israeli journalist and director, has spoken of the backlash he has received from his anti-war speech he made at a Berlin event. I'm going to include that audio just for educational purposes and for reasons that it's important to hear from direct voices that know the culture around religion, racism, the experiences within the situation, rather than my opinions, insights, and me trying to put things together.
I want to say we are standing in front of you now. Me and Basil are the same age. I am Israeli, Basil is Palestinian. And in 2 days, we will go back to a land where we are not equal. I'm living under a civilian law, and Basil is under military law. We live 30 minutes from one another, but I have voting rights, and Basil is not having voting rights. I'm free to move where I want in this land. Basil is, like millions of Palestinians, locked in the occupied West Bank. This situation of apartheid between us, this inequality, it has to end.
It's important that we listen to these things. These things that have to be said, that we have to open our mind to. It's going to take years for a lot of people to truly understand the many layers to this, that the trauma and pain is being happily inflicted from people who claim so much trauma, so much pain in previous generations. You're inflicting this now in modern day for so many people. Not to mention, not to think of how it's going to go on in different ways for the kids that will survive. The little humanitarian aid that's getting through, food, is sometimes having to pull out because social unrest. People are obviously going to go through social unrest when they haven't seen proper food in so long. They need parents, mothers, children, all fighting for themselves and fighting for the rest of their family. Of course, this is going to be a dire situation. You know, like the way Israel are sending in all these notes and things, just telling people, quick, get out of your area. Maybe that's what you have to do, but you have to do something. You have to be innovative. Action is beyond needed. Seeing grown men crying, not being able to even comprehend what's going on. How are they still alive? All they've seen, the near misses they've been through. They can't understand how they're still here. The people of Palestine have been forced to show how resilient and beautiful they are. Bassan, in a recent video I saw, was showing her gratitude for the people across the globe who are showing up, who are demanding action, while she is still living it. Second to second, Bassan is so aware of the hard work being done by powerless civilians who will never stop speaking up, will never forget the injustices and how beautiful we've still seen people be. So much work across the globe, so much healing to be done, and places people won't just be forgot about. Across the world, professors are being reinstated in positions after previous unfair dismissal just for being pro-Palestine and making statements pro-Palestine. People being vilified for condemning a genocide. Being told they are excusing away acts of a terrorist group, Hamas, when in reality we are just desperate for justice all across the board. I saw an interesting video of Bella Hadid where she was speaking about something I think we're not truly going to understand again for years to come, explaining how detrimental it can be to not show your support for things, that offending people within industries leads to not getting work, and that's a major fear. This sounds like the Me Too movement all over again, where eventually, after years, people felt comfortable to share their stories to say, I was assaulted, I stood up for myself, tried to speak out, I was exiled, I was blacklisted and vilified, attacked, or dragged through the media in some way. All tactics that have rapidly been done in this situation since the consequences of October 7th. If you are in support of civilians not being displaced or tortured, you are somehow anti-Semitic, or you're feeding into false narratives in support of terrorists. When Shuhada Sadakat, formerly known as Sinead O'Connor, first spoke on the true evil within the religious institutions ingrained into our society, she was tarnished. All the same people should be eating their words years later. For a lot of different things. Such a loss with her son. As I said, there's a lot to answer for when it comes to systems, services, mental health services. All across the board, a lot of people are being let down. And a lot of people have things to answer for. Child protective services. So many people are falling through the gaps. I'd like to share a statement from Action for Palestine Ireland. In a video they attached to the post, it was of Gardaí clamping down on protesters for Palestine. And obviously I don't know if the exact context wasn't there, but the anger that I could see in some of the Gardaí's faces, young Gardaí that are maybe new on the force, just seemed like just that, pure anger. Didn't seem like something that should be needed at a protest, never mind a protest for civilians who are being massacred. First off, Action for Palestine Ireland's founding principles, in their own words, are: we endorse the complete decolonization of Palestine through the dismantling of the genocidal and colonial Zionist project. We reject the two-state solution and endorse the creation of a single, liberated state of Palestine with the right to return for Palestinian refugees worldwide and reparations. We endorse the self-determination of the Palestinian people and their right to resist the occupation and genocide by any means necessary. The statement from the 17th of February 2024. On Saturday, the 17th of February, after the Ireland-Palestine Solidarity Campaign national demonstration, Action for Palestine Ireland held a peaceful, direct action encouraging shoppers in the Grafton Street area to support the boycott, encouraging consumers to boycott products that are going to fund the slaughter of civilians after AFPI was rushed out of the shopping centre due to threat of arrest. They went down Grafton Street, and after AFPI positively engaged with shoppers, Gardaí approached an activist demanding that they remove a Palestinian traditional scarf that was covering part of their face. Interesting, this was something Rishi Sunak was highlighting in his video, saying that they're going to clamp down on Palestine protests. He was really enforcing that face masks, face coverings are not right, and I understand that. Like, when it comes to racists and volatile people, yeah, I want to know who these people are, of course, so I understand they want to know who these people are, but they really, really want to know the identities of these people, and this activist complied. Gardaí then swarmed on the activist and demanded ID. Before the activist had time to respond, a larger group of the public order unit barged through the crowd, prompting activists to move forward. Gardaí then used Section 8 of the Public Order Act and threats of arrest to force individual activists out of the way. Gardaí violently and indiscriminately pushed, grabbed and lunged through activists, specifically targeting women. In the affray, two activists from Action for Palestine Ireland and Saoirse Ó Phalastaine were arrested in a rapid escalation initiated by the Gardaí and taken to a custody van. In making arrests and aggressively making their way into the crowd, Gardaí created a volatile situation where members of the crowd were hurt, intimidated, and had their property damaged. The approach of the Gardaí in response to AFPI today was in stark contrast to hands-off strategy that Gardaí have said they deploy in response to violent, threatening, racist protests led by the far right. The hands-on aggression, bullying of the Gardaí today created a needless escalation that put protesters that included minors, women and disabled people in fear and in danger of injury. Both activists were released from Irishtown Garda Station approximately 3 hours after their arrest. They faced charges. Just last month, an AFPI member was taken into Garda custody for over 10 hours from early morning before being brought before the district court on criminal charges. The case has since been escalated to the circuit court, where the penalty for conviction on indictment is a fine of up to 10,000 or imprisonment for a term not exceeding 10 years or both. Other arrests may follow on similar charges. Over 25 buildings have been burned down in connection with anti-migrant protests over the last 5 years. Not one arrest has been made in response to the fires, despite the threat to life they pose. On November 23rd, 2023, hundreds of far-right influenced rioters ransacked Dublin city centre, threatening to attack and even kill migrants. Only a handful of arrests have been made. Not one of the several public-facing agitators have been arrested or charged. Saturday was a clear demonstration of Garda bias and an affront to civil liberty, especially the right to assemble. AFPI reissues its call on the government to meaningfully intervene to end Israel's genocide, apartheid and occupation. Fair play to everyone that just knows what they're doing and is just involved doing it. The consequences can be heavy, but the community is there to show up and support, not leave people on their own to deal with these things. As it was mentioned, the riots were due to a stabbing incident where four people were unfortunately stabbed, a creche worker and three children. One child who is still in care, in hospitalization. Statements are few and far between, but the last thing I saw was she was being brought back into intensive care recently. Devastation, but this turned out that the man who did it was in Ireland for years. For all we know, the trauma that he built up, the aggression that he built up, came from us, came from the Irish. And there's never an excuse for this stupid stuff. People saying they're saving the country. and they're showing up just with Irish flags, shouting slurs, and then breaking windows and stealing in solidarity with innocent victims. Saying you're in solidarity with innocent victims, that's a slap in the face. And these far-right people who do agitate situations don't get any backlash, don't suffer consequences. In more recent times, in my area, there was a hotel that people went online and said that a 7-year-old migrant girl had been raped by 3 Roma men. Gardaí, as far as I'm aware, don't know of this incident. No one knows of this incident. But you bet your ass, by darkness, by night, there was a crowd. There was a huge group with Irish flags, shouting things, and saying enough is enough. What does that mean? Are you showing up for the victim who was raped and you're saying enough is enough? Because it doesn't seem like that. It seems like you're just showing up with racism. Enough is enough, and Ireland is full. Ireland is full of rapists too, Irish rapists. But I know, trying to reason with these people, and it's just worthless sometimes, that they just want hate and to fight somebody, whether it's a trans person, a gay person, disabled person, old person, a woman, a different skin color, someone that's not been born in the country, someone with a different accent. They'll always want to fight someone. Someone on Twitter, going by Care Too Much 18 or Danny Boy, is really shining a powerful light on all these far right people that are just getting away with the things they're doing, saying that a few weeks ago there was another thing that said a woman was stabbed outside City West, and it was all just false. People are just putting these things out there, and people are happy, desperate to run out and shout a few slurs and to try kick up fuss. Is there a waste of space? That's one account I found on Twitter that's really breaking down all their statements, what they're doing, what they're saying, how it's untrue, shining a light on incidents I hadn't heard about, but I do miss out on a lot of news, so that's not hard. These people that just make up this shit, put it out there, incite violence, are the ones that scream about free speech when it comes to talking about anything gay, anything trans, anything different to their lifestyle. You have the free speech, look at you. You can just say whatever the fuck you want and get a big, stupid crowd, a stupid racist mob behind you, ready to fight over anything. You have it. Meanwhile, you can barely talk about sexual assault or heavy issues without being told to be quiet online and different things like that. So we need more awareness around censorship and the ones that are using language to incite hate, violence, and the ones that are actually just trying to guide people through what they've been through and not just carry on sweeping things under the rug. Like, it's like we've always had that in society where people couldn't talk about their problems authentically. Nowadays, going into the internet and social media where we can all connect so easily and share our different perspectives, it's shit to have to try and navigate algorithms and censorship, and when you're not actively showing up with hate or inciting violence and hateful ways like these people are. Where are these crowds when actual injustices are happening? When Georgianchenko, who was going through a situation, I don't know the full extent, and for his family's sake, I don't want to. He was a man who was in the midst of something and was shot, was killed by Gardaí. Something you do not hear. For fear of their own life. I'm going to link a very good podcast conversation that breaks down Georgianchenko, his life, and the story specifically, like, and yeah, do it justice because the family and the situation deserves that. But an article I'll link as well is from February the 20th. Three Gardaí shot with pellet gun while trying to execute court orders. A man was arrested after three Gardaí were injured after being shot by what is believed to have been a pellet gun in Longford on Tuesday. Gardaí in Longford attended a residence on Tuesday morning to execute a number of orders. Shortly after Gardaí gained access to property, a man in his 30s present in the house discharged what is believed to be a pellet gun. This man was then, obviously, peacefully arrested. Not to say that this man should be shot, but to say in stark contrast that a gun is a gun for a split second. You don't know what's happening. It's saying three Gardaí were injured, actually injured. And this man was just arrested. Obviously, different situations, different jurisdictions, everything. But it's a stark contrast to a black man who needed support, needed help, and was brutally killed by our force, our security, our safety, letting our own people down again and again. So many questions with that situation to be answered. Hope to share more and more how I'm educating myself, the inspiring people who are putting content out there, whether it's art, literature, podcasts, whatever it is, educating people. I want to highlight more global atrocities, social issues. Of course, Sudan is such a prominent issue from the little I've seen. And to really simplify a huge layered situation, it seems like, again, two emotional men who are just destroying everything and everyone out of pure stubbornness. The Sudan Armed Forces, the SAF, under the command of General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan, and the paramilitary rapid support forces headed by General Mohamed Hamdan Dagalow. Again, hope we pronounce those names kind of right, but also don't really give a fuck. You're causing such devastation, you gobshites. According to United Nations figures from January 2024, of Sudan's 45 million people, 5.9 million are internally displaced and 1.4 million have fled as refugees. 25 million people are in need of humanitarian assistance with a looming food crisis and famine. I'll link a documentary by DW. They were speaking with women in Sudan who have fled extremely dangerous situations. They fled to the Nuba Mountains. Some women overcome with grief for the loss of family, friends, their lives that they had. Grief for their children. Children who have been killed, but also have remaining children who they strive to keep going for, showing up for everything and cherishing every little bit of life that they can with them. The community between the women that would not let each other down, not let each other fall too far down emotionally, physically. It was heartwarming in the midst of such a disaster, such enforced disaster, unnecessary, inhumane situation. The enforcement of religion also seems to be an issue, causing major conflict in Sudan for a long time, with people having Christianity and Islam forced upon them. What are your views on religion? Whatever perspective you have, has it gotten you through something? Has it been the worst thing in your life? So many lives are peacefully dedicated to religion, but religion is also a common denominator for pain and drama. Globally, within many religions and denominations, crime against men, women and children are prevalent, and leaders of these organizations are profiting off them, profiting off pain, while spurring on unhelpful, outdated ways of thinking. The documentary I was watching was in conversation with resilient, powerful women who've lost everything, some with severe physical devastation and disabilities, but the conflict is ongoing and the resilience that just shines through, the drive to keep going, to not give up in any way, to crumble emotionally or feel the despair. So different to people in privileged situations who have a roof over their heads, have food on the table, have no real major trauma, that are just losing their shit and in the midst of despair all the time. Strong, powerful people across the globe. Really inspiring. People who shouldn't have to be going through this situation, shouldn't have to be digging into the depths of their core to muster some sort of strength to keep going every day. But they do. And we're all, no, we're not all. The logical ones, the ones of us with common sense, are all rooting for people across the globe in unjust, inhumane situations. One story I saw recently was two women, two friends. They became friends online and later realized that they were actually sisters, separated, of course, by the Catholic Church. Nessa Hurley and Anne O'Connell became friends 8 years ago. And then in 2022, one of the sisters got a call saying from the adoption services confirming that her friend was actually her sister, her half sister. Thankfully, both sisters were adopted by gorgeous families, in their own words, and they understand how lucky they are. They're grateful, and they're really grateful for being able to reconnect. Obviously, they connected in a way, but that must be some sort of reconnection afterwards then. And how grateful they are for their mother, to let their mother know that they're happy, everyone's happy together. Beautiful, beautiful people that have been through such devastation across the board, from the mother and baby homes, from the Magdalen laundries, from different institutions, so built into schools, enforcing our way of thinking. But the people who have been affected, the people that have seen, who have been able to reconnect with their families or have been separated from their families, are just so grateful for answers, for getting to reunite, even if it's for short times. One man I remember who I think only got to meet his mom once, maybe, or just briefly, and he was just so happy that he got to, just the bare minimum, or he was so happy that he got to attend her funeral, something like, just something that people shouldn't have to be grateful for. And the church instilled these things, just saw it as their right. People who have a God, who tell us how much we should fear God and feel ashamed of what we do because of God, are actually the ones playing God and controlling everything and telling us how to be. And it's, in my opinion, not benefited a lot of people, even the highest of the high, who are devoting themselves. Not in a materialistic way. They're sour people. They're not nice. It's not pleasant a lot of the time. Some are, of course, that is. What's the word for discrimination against religious people?
I looked it up and I can't find one. Is there one? Is it just religious discrimination? I don't want to do that. I don't want to be discriminatory, because there's some beautiful, of course, people within Christianity, Islam, Buddhist, Jewish, whatever you're doing, as long as you're not forcing things down people in more ways than one, and yeah, being hateful. I'd love to learn from your religion. Cillian Murphy is actually starring in an upcoming film detailing a father finding out the treatment of mothers and babies in these institutions. So that's going to be the perspective of it. The Magdalen Sisters is a good movie you should see, and I believe one of the actresses that played a woman, what is it, fallen woman, that they call people that had been institutionalized, one of the actresses that was in the original The Magdalen Sisters movie is in this movie, which I just found interesting. Nice little crossover. Not that the stories are probably connected in any way, like, but also similar. The devastation that is done, that our society has felt, they
have the power to do over women.
Using the Catholic Church and women to segue into Irish politics, there is a referendum coming up, and the Catholic Church have let it be known that they're going to wait till the last minute to say what they have to say about the situation. So I definitely want to share my thoughts, opinions, perspectives. Please do not attack me. From what I've educated myself on, this is my hope. Hoping that there is a lot more change when it comes to the future. This isn't it in any way. I'll explain a bit more first. There's going to be votes on two changes to wording in the Constitution. One will be for diversity in care, and one altering outdated exclusive language around family. Article 41.2.1, in particular, the state recognises that by her life within the home, woman gives to the state a support without which the common good cannot be achieved. Article 41.2.2, the state shall therefore endeavour to ensure that mothers shall not be obliged to, by economic necessity, to engage in labour to the neglect of duties within their own home. So the vote is to have those two things removed and instead change it to, the state recognises that the provision of care by members of a family to one another by reason of the bonds that exist among them gives to society a support without which the common good cannot be achieved, and shall strive to support such provision. I don't understand how the first statement that a woman's duties lie in the home, and we recognise that the work that a woman, a mother, does in the home goes towards the rest of the family, the rest of the people going out there and being productive men or productive people in society. This doesn't reflect a lot of situations in modern day. They can't do that because they're barely surviving on the wage that's coming in. Never mind single parents, lone parents that aren't getting the support they need. In my opinion, most people opposed to this have been privileged people who don't understand that there's more families out there, or don't like them. People who haven't thrown themselves into what some view as just a money racket scheme. Of course, divorce is never the option, but it's been pretty rampant. So that's also so costly. Some people just don't think in that way, and now here they are with grandkids and a loving family around them, and one of them might get ill or something, and they're thinking, oh shit, we better do the ceremony. Like, it's just not a thing to some people. That's why they want to change it to durable relationship when it comes to care. There's so many different dynamics that are going on in this country now. Just bringing it forward and more inclusive. And also then, when people are included more, more people can be fighting to hold the government accountable, to actually stand up and say, in our constitution, it says that you're going to strive to actually support us, and you aren't doing it. You need to do more. If you aren't doing more, out. Get the fuck out. So, in no way do I think is this referendum a change. Citizens Assembly and people all across the board have said this is not good enough. People with disabilities, this wording seems to be aimed at carers and giving them some dignity and recognition, which is well deserved. But people with disabilities, their main concern, I believe, is bodily autonomy and independence, and that this does nothing for them. There's not even been an effort. That is something that has to be done as well in coordinates in the future. I'm not a politician. I don't know everything. I don't know anything. We need to all rally around each other. Through society, through all the systems that have been built up to be exclusive day to day, everything that I spot, that's just like people with disabilities just can't do these things. What? Like, this doesn't make sense. We have to put more pressure on recognition for people with severe disabilities severe life impacting consequences and are living independent lives, but need that support, need that recognition from the state. That's something I want to get behind in any way too. It's all, as I say, I'm hoping going forward we're going to make a change, and if change isn't being made, we change the faces that are in power. A lot of different extremism views that are also being put out there by the Catholic Church, by far right people, similar, all kind of, yeah, just fear mongering, just what if, like, as far as I'm concerned, as far as I know, this referendum is just wording. It's not changing birth certs, it's not allowing anyone you've had a relationship with to come in and swoop your inheritance and take everything off you. Like, it's not. These people, the bishops have done it, Catholic Church has done it, people online are doing it. It's fear mongering and what if. And yeah, of course we have to think what ifs, but can we also think, what if we're just including people in something that just goes over your head, you don't give a fuck about, and you want to stay ignorant about? Maybe that's what's happening here. Governments are notorious for not sticking to their word, so I understand why no one is happy with what is being proposed. But it still has to be pushed forward, and we have to demand just more and more change. That, yeah, we do demand it. We aren't happy looking at all the different levels, people who are really suffering, and how much there is a gap between the wealthy people who are just so out of touch. Systems aren't fair and change is needed. The people of Ireland want change and are going to demand it more and more. I'm really grateful for the people showing up, speaking up and educating people. It's awakening a passion in me and a want and need nearly more to educate myself, because like a lot of people, for the longest time I didn't care, didn't see the point, because bare minimum I didn't want to survive, never mind actually have my say and opinion and try benefit the country, the world that we're living in. But now I do, so here we are, trying to be less shit. That's all we're doing, just trying to be less shit. I, of course, don't want to speak for women, and want to make clear that I don't just want to remove in any way the term woman, the experience of motherhood, and celebrating every bit that encapsulates. Equality on all scales is needed. I'm going to demand that going forward from the government. So I've just got a clip of a kind of ramble, a kind of thought process I went on. Context to it was I had planned to get involved with a social movement, a social group at the weekend. Got up the morning, was planning on going, and just the social anxiety took over. I wanted to get involved, just stand there even and get educated. But the things that I'm working out with my therapist, as I said, understanding why, down to trust issues and previous things and social events that haven't gone well, so are kind of like a valid body response, but I need to break down because the things I'm passionate about and want to be involved in. I had the plan and then it didn't go how I expected, but yeah, here's my wave of consciousness and I'll break it down then a bit more afterwards. I'm in this rock and a hard place of I want to connect, I want to have a community, but I want to isolate myself and not have to deal with any sort of social anxieties. Got to break this curse. Something that's just resonating in my head as I'm walking along is I need to focus on healing the masculine a bit.
I think my gravitational pull, emotional wise, is towards women. And different things, different reasons make me reluctant to approach men, even though I appear masculine. So it's the dynamic of being the scary, unapproachable man on his own. It's awkward. But I know I want to connect somehow. How the fuck do I do it? By healing the masculine, for example, I mean, when I was looking for therapists a couple of months ago, I was kind of specifying women only, because, as I said, I just feel like I connect more. And the therapist I ended up being appointed through a government kind of system for addictions treatments is a man. And he's so reassuring in that I can be sensitive as I want, and I'm still a man, I'm still a person that is validated. And that's the main thing that I found has helped me through the systems, I think, feeling validated, feeling like I'm able to use my authentic voice and say exactly how I'm feeling, and people are validating it in ways of being a third party, a different perspective, and saying, when you step back and look at your life, it's valid. It's valid, the actions that I'm beating myself up on and I'm trying to push deep down and bottle up and hide away. The things that are just consequences of built up trauma. So working through them and being validated in them has been half the battle nearly.
I think healing the masculine is something that was coming up for me, and embracing my femininity is something more I want to do, because it's something that's always been there, I've always been aware of, but I've been trying to push down more and more. So more with the masculine, it's conflict, and men themselves have left a negative mark on me in many ways. So I isolate myself and push myself away, but also I'm a man in construction. I mean, what can be a macho alpha male environment. So I've always been told I'm sensitive and I've got to toughen up. But specifically now being in the industry, I'm realizing how much I am, and I'm more embracing it, to be honest. It's something that I want to stand to me. I don't want to be just hard and ruthless and abrupt, and it's not me. And I suppose I'm kind of working out, like, going from a CPP, a chronic people pleaser, to a CPD, a chronic people disappointment, kind of letting people down and being selfish in my own way. But for people who have given all their energy away to other people and not built themselves up in any way, I think it might be necessary to go through, because things are so specific, things are so general. If that was my main advice, that was the advice I would give. If I'm coming on here and saying I needed to be selfish for a while and disconnect from people and stuff, that's no good to anyone who is already being told they're quite arrogant or selfish or narcissistic, or, you know. So things are specific and general, and it got to the point there, as I said, chronic people disappointment, where there's so many things I want to show up for, I should show up for, no matter what is going on, but I physically can't now. It's like I took this mask off of people pleasing, showing up at everything all the time for anyone that was possible that I could connect with, to now isolation and building myself back up and back onto a path of a social circle that I actually want to be surrounded with, and a life that I actually want to live, is something I'm being really grateful for. Got diagnosed with PTSD. These are all interlinked. The ways I've built up how to cope, and they benefited me for so long, but they've got me in this unproductive sort of state now, which I'm acknowledging I'm on to work on, and I'm enjoying working on,
not just trying to rush it. Definitely a lot harder to see it day to day, but reflecting on little changes that are being made every week, every month, being able to reflect and see a vast amount of growth is positive, but also being so aware that anything could happen. I could take a few steps backwards tomorrow. I did the other day. It's like that, just being sensitive over something that should have gone over my head. But once one thing kind of breaks me down, it's like the floodgates open and everything is emotionally raw, and those are consequences. Those are why I went to the mental health team. And I think anyone living now in this day and age has some sort of baggage, some fire they've walked through, or maybe a cloud hanging over your head that is just ready to rain unexpectedly at any point. We all go through stuff. Our lives are so specific. Things are general in a sense, but so specific. Our chemical makeup, our social circumstances that come into play before we're even born. Taking all those things into consideration, there are some things that will generally fit into everyone's lives, like exercise, stretching, mindfulness, meditation, nutrition. Some things that make people more productive, or some just to make people better, bare minimum. Just feel a bit more human. That's what I've been looking for recently. I would love to aim for high productivity, and right now, yeah, I'm just learning to be human again. And so some things I've learned, I'll throw at you down the line. Anything people have learned, whether it comes to stretches, mindfulness exercises, nutritional ideas, drastic things or minor things, whatever you've got, throw it at me. I'll try it out. The things that benefit us can be all around you, but it's dependent on your financial, social situation, what you could easily access. Intensive therapy catered to your situation, or health and wellness guided specific to your lifestyle needs from an educated source would make a significant difference in everyone's lives. But with lack of services, it becomes a financial and social divide when it comes to wellness or healing trauma. Addiction services are limited, yet addictions all across the board are rampant. Drug and drink related criminal charges are brought daily, but my own personal insight when reaching out to affordable professionals that are meant to have the guidance, I was met with limited resources, general websites with basic information, and organizations that have extensive waitlists. Also, people within organizations that didn't have compassion or understanding for how vulnerable people are. As I said before, I applaud anyone working in care, in mental health especially, because I know how hard that can be with the overlap of addictions as well, that things are really complicated. People sometimes don't want to make the changes, but want the help. And you know what will help, but they're not ready for that. Having that understanding and compassion as opposed to shame and disgust with people is kind of appreciated. Personally, when I went to a doctor before to be like, it's only weed, but I want to get off weed. I know it's causing more anxiety, paranoia, holding me back, making me unproductive. And she turned around to me and was like, well, any psychologist and therapist won't want to speak to you until you're sober. I was like, that's your advice? She gave me resources like drugs.ie and Samaritans and stuff to reach out to. I was like, so your advice for someone struggling to get sober is get sober? Help in any way. So that was just a bad one. That was a bad experience. Since that, I've reached out again and was put into a system of mental health services and actual evaluations and
understanding what is going on, as opposed to having your bias or your decision made without actually asking someone a few questions. A lot of the systems are fucked, in my opinion, but there are some really good ones. I don't want to have this podcast based in despair, and if someone is suffering, to think there's no options. There is, there's plenty that you mightn't think about. So sticking around is the main thing, to figure out, was it a bad day? Did I not express myself enough? Did the person have a bad day themselves and already made up their mind on their decision before I opened my mouth? Did something I say trigger something in them to just do kind of a protocol thing, as opposed to actually assessing my needs, other opinions whenever possible? When you feel let down or in despair, is really important. I've never been someone who's able to speak up for myself, but through the system, through getting good people who have helped me feel validation in, shit, you've actually been through a lot. You've been trying to cope and now it's not benefiting you, and you're in a lot different levels of trauma, physically, day to day, emotionally, sensitive wise. There's lots of things going on, but also separate to the trauma and things built up, my inner monologue is not great. So the basis of it, so just loads of different little things have made me feel validated by them and able to then use my voice, be a bit more authentic, speak up for myself. There's so many, it's like has to be a perfect concoction for things to go right when it comes to healing and things like that, that us, when we're showing up looking for help, have to be in the right mindset and open to change and help. But also, yeah, the services have to be available and the people within them have to have the level of understanding and care, as opposed to simply clinical. I think many curtains probably need to be pulled back when it comes to pharmaceutical addictions in Ireland as well, that they are also a gateway thing. Like, cannabis has always just been told as a gateway drug, pharmaceuticals, and the dangers of people being overprescribed things and then turning to streets to fill that prescription when the professional isn't writing it anymore. People getting put on worse paths, not to say pharmaceuticals is the be all and end all, that the gangs are not to blame. These are two different gangs, is what it feels like, ruining people's lives in various degrees, penalizing people within the criminal sense, and society looking down on people because their drug is not to your liking, when everybody's just trying to cope and the services, the support isn't there for people when they want change. Shame doesn't help us. I'm interested in like the different social views on drugs. That cocaine at a party, ooh, sexy. Cocaine on your own, desperate, depressing. Just different things. What are your perspectives on drugs? Like, what is the etiquette? And when is too far? One line. Nice, good buzz. Oh, did you see him over there? He just did 6 lines. Da, 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 da. You're all doing lines. There's so much judgment cast, and in myself, then it's weird within weed. Like, if I was to say to a lot of people, yeah, I'm trying to give up weed and I'm really struggling, and da, 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 da. Shut up and smoke a joint. Like, and I get it. I'll probably be smoking to the rest of my life. Like, if I was able to retire tomorrow and just smoke, good luck, goodbye. But I have ambition, I have want to make more with my life. And if I had more willpower to just stop or smoke less joints, that'd be great, but I don't. And it's necessary for a lot of stuff I want to do. Got to be sober for everything in life. Social situations, everything. Not just what I want to do. Life in general. Enjoy it more. Balance. I'd love. In all aspects of life. Back to the notes. Back to the notes. An episode from the Huberman Lab I wanted to share as well. A journaling technique. I've been looking for more different ones. I find I'm journaling best on my phone because I can kind of edit when I'm editing on pages. When you see like scribbles and stuff you're trying to edit, it just looks messy then, and I feel done. I lose track of, with the phone anyway, you can just delete, change things around, go back, enjoying that more. But the Huberman Lab was talking about a science-based journaling to improve mental and physical health. He talks in highly educated terms, breaks it all down. I'll link the episode, of course. But yeah, basically sitting with a set timer, 15 minutes, half an hour, focusing on the deep, the bad. And for people, you might say, why would you want to do that? Why would you want to focus on? But he's saying, when it's bad enough, you will. When it's stuff that's showing up in your dreams constantly, when it's stuff that's making you dissociate during conversations and not actually be present in life, when it's things that's crippling your body with pain, with tension, with chronic pain, and IBS, different things, all the different things he was talking about. Interesting that, what's the worst you could lose? If these things are really ruminating on you anyway, force yourself, sit down, and the way he was saying it, of like, just go, just write, go, 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 don't worry about grammar, don't worry about this, don't worry about that, details, and all that. So I'm going to try, and yeah, as I was sharing before, lyrical is still kind of the style, poems, basic little kind of rhymes have been the way things have been coming out and easily expressed and making me want to do it more, as opposed to like if you're just thinking of memories, and that can obviously, yeah, just be hard. But if you're like writing a story or writing a song or a poem or being creative, a painting, different things, interested in creative forms of releasing, not just ruminating on the bad things, releasing them in somewhat, or looking at them in a new light. 10% Happier is a podcast I found recently. It's by Dan Harris. It's a platform actually with lots of different things and meditations and inspiring guests who are highly educated on all different topics. One recently I was listening to was with Nedra Glover Tawab, a licensed therapist and best-selling author. Nedra explains all things boundaries in a digestible way. It's not just a buzzword. How they can be broken into groups, porous, rigid, and healthy. Porous, meaning like no boundaries. What I describe myself as, people pleasers, all that kind of thing. These people report burnout and being overwhelmed. And yeah, I would definitely have been like that for a long time, of happy and wanting to take on people's energy and not really focusing on yourself or who you are as a person, because you want to just focus on other people's stories, be the yes man, be the yes person. And yeah, it exhausts you. You're always drained then from it, but happy to do it. Porous, meaning no bound, rigid, is unhealthy independence then. It's a bit of a, where did you learn that boundary from, and why are you that cut off? me, I find myself like that more socially, that people who I'm really enamored by and have clicked to it, even still now, something in me is okay, but keep a distance and don't get into another codependent friendship or relationship. Or I'm so wary of dynamics that have been repeated in the past. I've felt as the common denominator so much, and I am in that way of the energy that I give and what my expectations are, the standards that I allow. I found myself in groups where people were just in their mindset and they weren't ready to teeter out of that way of life, and I get that. So I felt like the streak of misery, and I've exiled myself then from society in every way, from family functions, from events, from happy, sad, in between things, funerals where I should be showing up for people, showing my respect, christenings, celebrating new life, birthdays, Christmas. So much of life that I'm not getting involved in. And learning with my therapist that frame these things in a different way. You're trying to protect yourself. Your mind, your body has told you that you need to. And we're going to break it down. We're going to unlearn bad habits and learn safe new ones. I've been in counselling before, and I find this counselling and this therapy is giving me a lot of building blocks, more and more, that I can incorporate daily into my life in various ways. Like I was saying, creativity, looking at things with curiosity more, and looking at things with curiosity more, and not beating yourself up. Looking at things like why. And isn't that interesting that this happened, as opposed to, oh, for fuck's sake, this happened again, da 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 da. It's been quite illuminating. Can't recommend therapy with the right therapist enough. It's good to be celebrating little milestones, and also knowing that when I crash, and in times I have, that I'll pick myself back up and I'll learn a new technique maybe next week to deal with it, as opposed to, oh fuck, here we go again, and we're just going backwards. The despair is lifting completely. Long story short, just trying to be a bit of that shit. Want to show up for people, want to connect with people that I have wronged in the past, and as well friendships and dynamics that I've let people down, or my boundaries have been skewed or messed up, that I've hurt people in ways. And some people deserve apologies, and I want to give them. Some people don't, and I'm happy to never see them again. Some people I have a lot of questions for. From the clip I inserted the day at the beach, I was able to be introspective at least that day, and a day at the beach where I wrote a few more lyrical kind of style things, and again, cringe possibly, but sharing is caring, if anyone resonates in any way. Happy to share more and more down the line, because I'm enjoying it anyway. So it's either going to sit on my phone, or I read it on the podcast and feel a bit more confident in myself. I don't know. We're all nice and light, of course. One on overeating to fill the void. One on sexual assault. And one on a toxic kind of relationship. So where do you want to start? The overeating one is nice and short. I tried to fill it with some ice cream, but it was too soft. So I stuck it in the freezer and felt my heart defrost. Then tried to numb it all out with some cake frost. But the hunger is always there, like the pain I've got. Going in between phases, for me personally, of disordered eating, of sometimes not eating enough, and oh, it's nighttime and I haven't eaten today. And then sometimes just unconsciously eating, 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 eating. And Yeah, everything is so, of course, linked to emotions and people's stories. So no judgment, no shame, just awareness. Another one that came to me while on the beach then, that, yeah, kind of felt like a little bit of release, a bit of, sums up how all over my brain has kind of been since the sexual assault. I hate being stuck in this body that's been compromised. I think it might take a while, but I hope I'll heal it in time. You altered my brain, my soul, and my mind when you did what you did that fateful night. Pinned me down to the ground and ignored all my cries. I gave you no consent, but you didn't seem to mind. You said I was teasing, though I said ahead of time I didn't want your sleazy body penetrating mine. You pissed away my ambition, my faith, and my trust. Do you even know you did it, or do you think it was all lust? Well, now I'm building myself up bigger than I ever was before. If you didn't know you hurt me, you'll hear it in my roar. For now, I'm trying to be kind to this body, letting go of shame that isn't mine. I will never understand why you did it. Here's hoping karma catches you in time. Cheers to you, motherfucker. I don't know. That's it. That's all. So many questions. A man, a one-night stand, a situation where I said from the beginning, before we even met up, what was not happening, for sure. We were not fucking. And repeatedly said it there. And was ignored, forced, abused, mistreated, and yeah, walked away with the shame, walked away with the blame of, fuck, I shouldn't have met up with him, it's all my fault. People are walking down the street or safe in their house and get attacked. I asked for this. Easily went into that mindset with the culture that is around us. That man probably thought it was normal to do what he did. The brutalization. People are teasers. Take it anyway. No? Mm-mm. And then one that details one perspective I have of a toxic relationship I was in, where we were both toxic at the time and haven't seen him since, because it was, yeah, not nice whatsoever. Weird, kind of so much closure, but absolutely no closure from the situation. It was bizarre, but have a lot of perspectives from it because we were both in bad positions, that he was an asshole, a dickhead, and a man that was 16 years older than me that said when he first met me, threw all this love on me and could see the position I was in, that I'd been through something and wanted to look after me and guide me, and then just ended up taking all my insecurities and using them against me. But I can also see the perspective that he was a man that was hurting. He was someone that was hurt and had a lot of family issues and took it out on the one that was closest to him. So, not to explain it away, but I understand. We had a fight. You wrecked the whole house. It wasn't nice seeing you like that. Try that you might to always hide it. I'll never forget the look in your eyes. And you run your mouth when it's unwanted. It left a mark. I still feel haunted by your ghost. The feeling's daunting. Would you even recognize me, even though I'm gaunting? Punishing myself for your thoughts. The things you said to hurt my soul. Or what you did that day. You broke my heart in half. Tried to ruin me like the rest of your house, like the broken vase put together with visible scars. Walking at my own pace, finding some solid ground, rebuilding faith on a better path. If someone resonates with what's been on my mind, I hope there's one day it'll feel so far behind. And that's it and all for now, I suppose. I'll talk to you soon. Send me your thoughts, opinions, perspectives, what issues are going on in your area, in your mind, in your household. Interesting. Doesn't have to be interesting. I'm not that interesting. Any thoughts, opinions, insights. Good night. God bless. Talk to you soon.
Leave a mark with me, Aaron Thomas.